it's a problem that's been there for quite a while, and that farmers have kind of piecemealed solutions together. So they've hired, you know, part-time labor, retired, old retired guys that kind of came in and filled these peak labor demand. That was kind of the labor solutions that have been put in place.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost your yields with KWS Hybrid Rye featuring Pollen Plus technology. Learn more at kws.com. Grow a carbon crop below your row crop. Add carbon to your balance sheet with Loam Bio.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show by Wisenetics. I'm your host, Leo Bastos, Assistant Professor in Integrative Precision Agriculture at the University of Georgia. Today, we welcome our guest, Matt Bose. He is the founder of AgriGrowth Consulting, based in South Dakota, and specializes in helping multi-generational farms grow strategically through peer group formation and facilitation, auxiliary business development, and succession planning. Matt, welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show. It's really great to have you here today and a topic that is very important and that we don't cover that often enough. So to start things off, I'd like to ask you if you could share with us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so I grew up in central Nebraska, small town, and there, and agriculture has kind of been near and dear to my heart. I worked on a farm and ranch in central Nebraska for 9 years growing up, clear before I could actually drive, when I had the rancher used to pick me up at my house, and I would go pretty much open gates and put out mineral with him. And he was an old guy. And I think my job was to make sure he didn't die in the sand hills in Nebraska. But so I did that. I worked on that ranch for 9 years, clear through middle school, high school, and almost all the way through college. And then, yeah, I ended up at Kansas State, where I got an undergraduate degree in agribusiness, and then migrated back north to Nebraska, got a master's degree, an MBA in agribusiness, and then spent my career working for different chemical manufacturers and running a couple different agribusinesses over the past 20 years, over and working with customers really about 7 different states, kind of in the Midwest, upper Midwest. So yeah.
Nice. Perfect. And can you share with us a little bit of what you've been doing these days, or not these days, but you know, in your current role, what are some of your main activities there?
Yeah. So I have my own consulting business where I work with, I would say, medium to large size farms on strategic and business development. A lot of times their biggest pain points that they have is going to be number one is, I think we're going to talk about it today, is labor issues. They all have labor issues. And number two is they have time issues. They just don't have enough time that the managing the business has got them capped out of what they can do. So yeah, those are the businesses that I work with and work with that. And then also found a niche of helping some farms build some diversified revenue streams. So taking some existing businesses they really have already in place and putting some structure around how to make those businesses really flourish. Not just kind of just simmer on the back burner, but to put some structure around them on how they can grow them. And a lot of times those businesses have really good margin structures, much, much better than their row crop businesses. And, which is vital in today's ag climate. And, yeah, so I found a little niche on helping them build those businesses out.
Fantastic. Yeah. This is, you know, we were talking a little bit about this earlier, but I'm so excited to be listening your thoughts on this very important topic of labor.
Yeah.
And to start off around that topic, you know, for those of us in the audience that are not farmers and are not facing that firsthand, could you explain to us how big is that problem and just how much of an important thing is in the back of farmers' heads these days?
it's a problem that's been there for quite a while. And that farmers have kind of piecemealed solutions together. So they've hired, part-time labor, retired guys that kind of came in and filled these peak labor demands. That was kind of the labor solutions that have been put in place. With COVID, just like everything here, the labor just became tighter and really got restricted. And so you're seeing that across pretty much all the farms I work with. And I think it just got to the point, maybe like a breaking point, where everybody looks around and says, hey, this isn't a short term effect. Like this trend is going backwards and we can't find labor. Just like a lot of people can't, if you run a restaurant or service-based business, pretty much everybody is struggling to find labor. And what I found here with that, you can't find labor, is when you don't have labor solutions, it bottlenecks all your growth opportunities. You can't think about growing your farm, and you can't think about growing any business. You're just doing what you can do with what you have. So, when you see those opportunities arise and you're like, oh, this would be great to capitalize on it, your mind doesn't even allow you to open up those possibilities because you think to yourself, man, how am I going to do this with what I have? Or I'm already working. I've already got everybody. Our labor is, we're redlined right now. Like we can't work any harder and we can't find people. So we're just shut off from any kind of growth opportunities, unfortunately. So.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's such a key topic. And especially for growers, I feel like a lot of the equipment and new technology and all these different things coming at growers are also requiring a different level of labor, right? As far as what should people be required to know to be able to operate some of this very complex equipment. And so even that adds to it as well, right?
Correct. And a lot of times I think in agriculture, we've done a pretty poor job of thinking about equipment as our solution to labor problems. We think about the new sprayer going from 90 to 120 feet. And we think about all these things that, John Deere pumps in front of us. And it's like, oh, can these, or we think about a grain leg that is faster and a dump pit and all those things that just, we're just making, those things are just minor efficiencies. They're not solving the problem. They're making things better. They may be making things, 2 to 3% better a year, but they're not making those big jumps that we really need to capitalize on growth opportunities.
Absolutely. And so to follow up on that, what are some of the challenges that farmers are really facing when looking for people, trying to hire and also trying to retain those people on their farms? And do you have any thoughts on some solutions to overcome those challenges?
The biggest problem is the labor pool is just, it's just not there. They can't find people. They can't find reliable people. They can't find people they can depend on. I guess that goes along with the reliability, but the people that are there, a lot of times, they're demanding a wage that might be twice of what they could reasonably pay. And so, they just don't have a lot of solutions and people aren't moving back to rural America. That's just the demographics that we face. Our labor pool is getting older and people are moving to more urban areas. So, those are some of the issues we're facing. And so, question of like, what's the answer, right? This is talk about problems all day. What are some labor solutions? So, there's a few of them that I really talk about when people are asking me about this. The first is you can do a few different things. You can be elite at culture and having a work environment where you have people from all over that are looking to come to work for your operation. Most operations just aren't that good. They're not drawing in people. But the biggest labor solution that I've seen is H2A workers. And you know, this H2A's program has been, I was just in a meeting with a guy who hires, I think he's up to like 23 H2A labor employees, and he has a landscape business. He's been utilizing that program for over 20 years. And so H2A program's been around a long time, and it's basically built for this specific problem. It is built to handle the seasonality of labor problems within agriculture. I've been spending just a ton of time with learning more about the H2A program, how it works, and just everything behind it.
Perfect. And well, you know, for us to follow up on that topic, could you explain what is the program, how does that work, and if you think that could be one of, well, I guess you already mentioned that it is one of the main solutions right now, but do you think that could continue being an important solution to the labor problem?
It's a great question. So the H2A labor program, and I just saw some statistics the other day that it's been around, say, at least 20 years. I know a guy that's been doing it since then. I think it's been around a long, long time. But it's a program where foreign workers are granted work visas to come to the United States. In agriculture, I would say the vast majority of businesses that I work with are either bringing in South Africans or they're bringing in Hispanic workers from Mexico, just depending on the skills. I know there's some dairies that bring in people from Guatemala, Honduras, those things. But they're granted a visa to come here. Usually they'll work for 9 to 10 months during the growing season, I would say. And then they return back to their native country for 3 months during the off season. So they're really, it's a program where individuals can come here, fill that labor gap, and then they don't have a permanent visa. They can't stay here, but then they usually return back to where they're from and for a few months. That's the program that's in bolts. And a lot of times, like South Africans, a guy tell me that he can come here, they can make a lot more money. A guy tell me that he can make in 1 month coming to the United States and working within the H2A visa program, he can make as much money as he does in 12 months working in South Africa on a farm there. So that's the benefit to a worker from, when you think about who would do that, who would come here. A lot of times they're going away from their families, who would come here, work, they work hard. They're looking for opportunities just like all of us are. And a lot of times they're highly skilled labor. They're not, they come from big farms in South Africa. They're skilled labor. They're not showing up to run a shovel all day. They're here, they're here to run John Deere's newest combine. They're skilled at it. That's kind of what it is. But some of the issues with the program is it's not a short-term solution. It's from the beginning of the process to get an actual person here, you're probably looking at 4 to 6 months. So farm operations, they really have to be thinking ahead on their labor issues on what in the coming years. It can't be something where, you have a guy quit in the middle of the summer and you're like, oh, I need an H2A laborer to show up and fill this void. It just doesn't, that's not how it works. So it's more of a, you got to be thinking ahead. Has to be it's a labor plan rather than a reactive strategy a lot of times. So yeah, it's not a short-term solution. And in fact, those businesses that I've seen run it best, they really, like year three, it really clicks in and they start, the labors they have start recruiting people from where they're from and the culture builds. The team gets cohesive, and that's really where the growth happens.
So, I have a question here that, you know, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on. So, you know, we talked about the issue of labor. We talked about some of the solutions, and you did mention that the people component is probably going to be the most important one to try to solve to some extent this issue. And I mean, and we know that there's so many companies and startups and so many technology coming at Growers, right? That includes machine learning, AI, machine vision, robots, automation. What are your thoughts around that? Do you think that can also become an important way to solve this issue? I think you talked a little bit about this as far as increasing equipment size, but when it comes to, you know, automation and equipment that perhaps does not require labor at all, or maybe very little of it, very little oversight, how do you see that fitting into this overall solution to labor?
This is such a great question. Artificial intelligence will be, like, if people haven't thought about how this will transform their farm operation, I think a lot of people, when you talk about artificial intelligence, they're thinking about drones that fly automatically, you know, all those things that somebody's bringing technology to their farm, correct? Some big startup is bringing this technology. Artificial intelligence, I can't emphasize this enough, what a great resource this will be for decision making, strategic planning on the farm. All these things you will have, you basically can have, you know, sitting next to you all the time. Think about having the world's foremost authority on whatever subject you are trying to digest sitting next to you, and you can ask them any question any time of the day, work through scenarios. It's an endless possibility. And so what I see this doing is the restriction on time right now on how to manage. And in fact, right now I'm working on for a guy, laborer, his HR problems, automating his HR problems with AI technologies. So I'm working on it right now. Like, I see this, I see about every problem that comes up, AI can cut that by 80%. That's my rough guesstimate. I don't know. I'd say it's wild. And so 2 years, my guess is it will become pretty standardized within agriculture. 2 to 5, you're going to see. So this is your opportunity in the next 1 to 2 years. If you want to distance yourself from others, dive into AI, dive into all your processes you have on the farm, your decision-making process, your strategic planning, your content creation. If you're doing, you know, content creation, you know, emails, just anything like that, AI will be, is such a great resource. And it's such a great resource for agriculture, and that we're also isolated. We don't have those experts closely at hand all the time. You know, if we want to run through a certain scenario, we have to call up our CPA, put some numbers together, send it to them. They crunch it through. This will be just the ability to make those decisions as fast as you can put that information in and hit enter. You're going to have output. So, yeah, I think we're in a wild time. AI is a wild time. And I've been diving deep into this and the solutions that are out there. So glad you brought that up, because it's this is the opportunity. This is it. 2 years probably to distance yourself from others.
Yeah, so here at the University of Georgia, we were looking to a program where a company would basically create a chatbot with all the extension material that has been developed at UGA, but also at neighboring states and universities, and basically allow a farmer to just ask, you know, any agronomic, I mean, not just agronomic, but in this specific case, any agronomic question, and have the chatbot use just localized resources to answer that. And so it's really something that, yeah, as you're saying, you know, it's going to take off in many different ways. And having that, you know, that extension specialist, that chatbot that has access to all this material to be able to answer you something that, you know, of course, we're still going to need the people to create this knowledge and this content, and it's not going to replace any specialist role at all, but it's just going to help to bring that access closer to farmers.
Yeah.
As you were saying, a lot of times very, very, very distant from where maybe that knowledge has been created, and just having more access to it as well.
Yeah. And as long as you are the thought leader behind it, you know, if you're asking AI to do something for you and you don't, if you just ask AI, say, hey, give me the best agronomic solutions for killing weeds on my farm that is the cheapest, that you're asking AI to be the thought leader. But if you're the thought leader, if you say, hey, I farm in Central Georgia, and you start putting scenarios together. I farm 1200 acres. I've got a 90-foot sprayer. You start putting all that stuff in. Here's the things I've always wondered about. Act as the world's number one agronomist and give me, first of all, what questions did I not answer that you need to answer so you can give me a better answer? And it will give you, it'll start asking you questions and then say, you know, give me some scenarios. And that's a for instance. But yeah, as long as you are the thought leader behind it, it's a powerful tool. It's wild. It's really wild.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so let me pull this conversation a little bit to the side of the robotics and automation. So this is something that, you know, it's most likely going to happen in different moments in different industries within ag. Some industries may be at a higher pressure and requiring more of those solutions faster than others. But what do you think about that? Do you think that maybe the farm of the future would be run by robots, or is that something that we're not going to get there anytime soon?
That technology will get adopted if it solves the solution and is economical. If it makes economic sense and it solves the biggest problem, it will get adopted as fast as humanly possible. I live in a part of South Dakota that adopted biotech the fastest in the nation. Was Southeast South Dakota adopted Roundup Ready, BT, triple stack corn, all those things, that almost the fastest adoption in the United States, Southeast South Dakota. Not the most progressive spot in the world, but the part of the world that needed that technology the most. And so don't underestimate what that means. You know, if it's a true pain point and people have urgency around it and the economics made sense, you know, watch out. Like in 2 years, we got Roombas basically running the countryside, spraying weeds automatically. You know, you're paired up with a neighbor, and you know, you got a little Roomba sprayer that docks at night, goes out and sprays 20,000 acres, and that's the world we live in. So that's what I think. You know, it's not that far off. You know, we're doing the See and Spray technology, where we're spraying individual weeds, things like that. So it's a great question.
It's real exciting to see what's gonna happen in the near future around all those topics. But
so it's one of the, I learned this too when I worked in that, when the ag chemical business for 20 years and worked in business. People like market share, when you're a business, market share, you can change it steadily, not giant gains, but when the giant gains happen is when new technology hits the marketplace. That's where companies like, the easiest one to think about is, you know, Monsanto. You know, Monsanto was really just a fledgling company. It brought new technology came to the marketplace, and then, you know, market share switches dramatically. So with big technology changes, farms, if they want to get like, this will be the opportunity for those big market share switches, you know, no longer growing at, you know, 3% a year. Think about, you know, 30% a year, 30, you know, just like those kind of changes.
Huge leaps.
Yeah. The huge leaps will come with like some disruptive technology, which AI is disruptive. There's no doubt about it. It's disruptive technology. So,
absolutely. So, before we get to our last three questions, I do want to ask you. You know, we have so many important topics that we could talk about today, but I do want to save some time for one last question here on the technical side. So you mentioned in the beginning that one of your activities with growers is helping them to identify ways to diversify their farming operation, right? And so I guess what my question to you is, for growers that are trying to do that, what steps should those growers take to start growing diversification opportunities in their farm?
You know, the interesting thing about that question is, from what I've found, almost 90% of the time is they already have a business. They already have a diversified, you know, they have a they may not have thought about it like that. You know, they've got a business where they started hauling manure for a neighbor, or they did some drain tiling for somebody, or they've done, custom work. So they already have these businesses. Somebody came to them with a problem and they had a little solution, and they probably had labor, workforce. So they solved that solution. It's just that they've never really thought about growing that business and thought about the customer. That's probably the number one key that I see out there. There's a disconnect between growing a commoditized product where you're growing bushels for dollars. Like, you don't really care. Somebody's going to buy it, correct? Like, if you grow, the price is dictated, but somebody's going to buy it. In a normal business, you really have to think about your consumer more than anything, and how you solve their problems, and those kind of things. So it's a little bit of a mindset shift there. But yeah, I would say most of the time they've already figured out, or they're already doing some diversified income streams. Just needs to be pour some coals to it, put some structure around it. And yeah, there's some just awesome opportunities out there. It's just amazing to me when I look at them. I'm like, this is incredible. Like, you have a credible opportunity here. You have a business, you got 30% margin structure built in, and like, what could this be if you doubled or tripled your revenue? Like, this would feed the rest of your business. This would take all the a lot of the pressure off, you know, staring at commodity prices day in, day out, and that dictating your profitability. So yeah, kind of rambled there, but yeah, there's some awesome opportunities. Awesome.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I mean, you're saying that basically these opportunities most likely already exist, and growers and farmers may already be doing that, perhaps on a smaller scale, not as a business per se. And I really like this thought of, you know, thinking differently from something that you sell as a commodity, that there's always going to be somebody to buy it, and you don't really have a customer that you have to know or please or talk to, I guess, compared to something that is the complete opposite, right? Now you have a person in front of you that needs a service, and then you have to really cater to that in more detail.
I asked a customer of mine, I said, we were talking about things. I said, who's your customer? And he owns a drain tiling business. And he's like, well, people that want drain tile put in. I'm like, well, who is it? I don't know. There's like people who need drain tile. Like where do they come from? What's their age? What's their, you know, all those things. Do they farm themselves? Are they, you know, just all those things. And he had never thought about that. So, and that's not right or wrong. I'm not condemning anybody for that, but just a little bit of clarity around that and starting to think about those things. Really, it's you know, just a clarity on those things. You can sit there and think like, oh yeah, I have an ideal customer. He, you know, there's 60% of the people I love serving. They pay their bills. They're awesome. And so like, how do we get more of those people? How do we start marketing to them, selling to them?
Nice. I'm really glad to know that there are people like you to help growers see that, not just the opportunities, but also, you know, the challenges and maybe the change in mindset to make it work or even more successful. So,
yeah, well, it's been great to kind of put together managing my own businesses with my background in agriculture and understanding, you know, agriculture is different. You know, it's got a ton of family dynamics involved in it. It's got seasonality. You have to build around too. It's not a quarterly business where we don't have, we literally have to build around the seasonality of it. So yeah, it's great to put those some of those lessons to use to help others.
Nice.
It's time for our famous three.
Well, if you're listening to this episode and you're enjoying our conversation, I ask if you could give us a thumbs up, share this episode with anyone you think could also benefit from it. And we're getting towards our last three questions of the episode. So, Matt.
Yes.
These are questions that we ask every guest. And to begin with, I would like to ask you if you have any resource that is related to agriculture that you've used in the past and has really helped you and you think could be also useful to our audience.
Yeah. So I still say I have it right next to me. And he was a mentor to me in this business. Dick Whitman, he has a book called Building an Effective Farm Management System. And in that book, it's got templates and everything for building basically anything on the farm outside of agronomics or machinery that you would need to run the farm business is in that book. So, yeah, Dick Whitman's been an ag consultant for 40 years, kind of the OG of that space. And so if you need a great resource, that's a great resource.
Nice. Is that something you have handy by your side that you could share for those watching on YouTube? That,
yep, there we go.
Could see the cover. Nice. Yeah,
it's right next to me.
Nice. Perfect. So our next question here of the three is very similar, but non-technical, right? So do you have any resources that are not related to ag directly, but that you would like to share with our audience?
Yeah. So the biggest resource that has helped me the most is a peer group or a mastermind of individuals, like-minded individuals that are on a similar path, surrounding myself with those people who will help me along my journey. So if you haven't, you know, a lot of times in agriculture, we're in rural America. We don't have people around us that are on similar paths, or if we're, you know, a lot of times that we think differently than others. And so it's like, how do you surround yourself with more of those people that when you bring a crazy idea out there, like, that's not a crazy idea. Like, I did that. I'm just two steps ahead of you. Like, that's not a crazy, like, don't do what I did. Let me help you. And let's grow together. Let's grow together as a small group. That's super powerful. Those concepts have been written about. I think I first read about it. There's a book called Think and Grow Rich. Talked about like the Rockefellers and the Fords. You know, that was a lot of their success as they put groups together and learned together. And that was over 100 years ago. So
fantastic. Do you have any thoughts about, you know, so if we let's say we have growers listening and they would be interested in either starting or maybe joining one, are there ways to facilitate that you could recommend?
Yeah. I mean, the easiest way is to, and this is from my own experience, and I do facilitate and form peer groups because 90% of the battle with the peer group is putting the right people together. That's 90% of the battle. It's just putting the right people in the right room. But yeah, if you haven't ever looked at it, just start digging into some structures out there and thinking about people locally, even if thinking about people locally, you're like, oh, I would like to spend some more time with this person growing a business. One of the drawbacks in agriculture is that we're a commoditized business, and we are often competing against our neighbors. Not often, like sometimes we are really competing against our neighbors. So it's tough to be super vulnerable with somebody who's close to us. A lot of times we need to go outside of our competitive circle to really be vulnerable, share things, make those truly powerful.
And so our last question here is, through your experience, what do you think are the skills or skill set that sets successful crop professionals apart?
I think it's just like any business. It's mindset. That sounds just dull, but it's just letting your mind think about like what the possibilities are. We should all be scared to death of what resides between our ears. We'll stop more opportunities than anything. So I think mindset is the biggest thing that we just need to look at or have somebody else help us with and change that. Just a little bit of shift in your mindset from somebody. I think we've all had it where somebody that says, you're a great, they point out something to you, like you're a great public speaker or then it just changes your mind. And next thing you know, guess what? You're like, oh, I'm a great public speaker. I'm really good at this skill. Somebody changed your mindset, right? So, it's an amazing skill. Something I work on all the time and try to surround myself with people who help me with that as much as possible.
Nice. It's really interesting because, I don't know if that was a coincidence, most likely not, but both your answer to the resource and to the skill set are connected, right? Is like your resources being part of a group that perhaps helps you to see things in a different way and encourage you to go to do things that you're excited about. So
yeah,
it's really, really, really cool to notice that.
Yeah. And so it is, they are connected, right? And a lot of times with mindset or like a growth mindset, it is often people, you can't see it in yourself. You can't see your own flaws. You can't see, you can't see what you just don't know. And so if you have somebody else that says, hey, you're looking at this completely wrong, or you don't see your own problem right here. It's huge.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for being our guest today. I really enjoyed our conversation, learned a lot of new things about labor issues and some of the potential solutions to that. Really, really enjoyed the conversation. It was a different topic and a very important one to talk about. So thanks for being our guest today.
All right. Thanks, Leo.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.